Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, on the Mendenhall Glacier. This is M0HBR in downtown London. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, Bill, M0HBR, KL7R. I forgot I had Echolink on here, and I was just settling down to watch some TV this evening. Is it Saturday? Good morning. It's 9:30 here in the evening. In Alaska, we got pouring rain, and temperature's 40 degrees. We had 10 degrees a couple days ago, and now it's 40. It's fairly yucky weather. How's it going?
Good, good. Well, I was happy to find you here on the Echolink list. All okay here. It's really, I guess our weather isn't as bad as yours. I keep looking at the map. I'm trying to figure out how much farther north you are than us. Not that much. We're at, I think, about 52 or 54 degrees north. You're up a bit further, but you're up there. Looks like, I'm looking at my map, it looks like you're sort of at Stockholm, Oslo levels. Kind of almost like, I guess, northern Scotland's up at the same latitude as you are. So the daylight darkness situation is worse for you, but not much worse, I don't think. We're getting now sunset at, yeah, we're at lat 58, all right. Yeah, I think we're lat 52. But we're, I checked yesterday, we're getting sunset now at 3:51 p.m. local. And the worst it gets is 3:50, and after that we start climbing out of the darkness. Don't get too cold here. It's not too cold now. We had a few days down around zero, but not too bad now. So what's happening on the technical front, Mike? I'm afraid I don't have too much to report here. I've been kept busy with other projects, but I'm hoping now to get back into technical stuff and maybe even learn how to edit and prepare Solder Smoke. KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, hopefully you're not having to work too hard and your work isn't too stressful, and hopefully it'll settle down pretty soon. Let's see. Well, I've been actually insanely busy. I got a bunch of parts and I started fiddling with them, and that led to other things. So I actually been pretty busy. Hey, did you see on the GQRP Yahoo group the long discussion in there about I think it's Superdrug radios? There's like a two and a half pound radio that they're selling in England, and these guys have figured out how to turn them into frequency counters and had that move them around in frequency and get extra bands out of them, and the GQRP club has been snatching them up. So I wonder if you've heard about that there, Bill.
Yeah, I've seen it. Very interesting. I think one of the main guys involved is Hans Summers, who's got a really, really great website and is always involved in really interesting projects. And I've watched that. Now, unfortunately, I don't have a super drug around me, and I live in one of the most expensive areas of London. I don't think they sell anything here for the prices that they mentioned there. For, I think it was £2.90, which comes out to about $4.50 U.S. But I don't think anything is sold here for that price. So I don't think we have a super drug around either. So I haven't looked for one. But if GQRP Club is snatching them up, maybe I'll get one from them. Yeah, it looked like an interesting project, but not really my kind of thing. I thought it was neat how they were turning it into all different kinds of items, but it's sort of radio on a chip, if you know what I mean. And for me, that's always been a little bit of a kind of a small black box versus a large black box. So I hope you have fun with it, but I don't think it's my kind of thing. But it is kind of neat how they stumble across something very, very cheap at the store and get it going. What else? I've been fooling around a little bit with my solar panels. I told you about my Armstrong method of aligning the arrays with the sun, and my batteries are gradually getting popped off, even with the sun as low as it can get on the in the south here in wintry London. But the GQRP Club, they always come up with something good. KL7R and 0HBR.
Yeah, Roger. That was the biggest news I saw that was going on. It was pretty interesting stuff here. One fellow had some watt meters that he was selling on QRPL. That looked pretty interesting. Some watt meter kits, and he looks like he's got a lot of talent there. It'd be interesting to see what he comes up with in the future. He's working on a beam antenna that looks like the butterfly beam in a way. It's really high Q, narrow bandwidth on transmit, and it's low Q on receive, and it's supposed to receive well from 3 to 30 megs, and it's supposed to transmit well from 14 to 30 megs. It's got a little microcontroller in it that supposed to adjust the tuning of the thing in a quarter of a second or something like that. Pretty interesting. Well, I don't know. I've been just crazy busy. I built that W7ZOI watt meter, got it built and calibrated, and then I found a piece of software out there that allows you to make custom dials. I made the dial read out directly in dBm. So it's a nice meter that reads out in linear dBm, even steps. It's not logarithmic. It's nice and linear. Pretty cool. Really happy with that. What else? Oh, I've been spending a lot of time. I bought this Atmel butterfly computer that Steve Weber. KD1JV, the guy that makes the ATS3, he used the Atmel Butterfly as a controller for the DDS VFO, and so I got an Atmel Butterfly, and I wired it up, and I pumped a bunch of code into it. I pumped six different programs into it, and I was really getting the feel of it, and I loaded his program in there, and then I loaded a different one, and then I loaded his program back in, and I got up the next day, and I could load no more programs into it. Somehow or another, it turned off its it turns off its ears like some satellites are known to do, and I can no longer put new code in it. So I have Steve Weber's working DDS VFO code stuck in the Atmel Butterfly, but other than that, it's for all intents and purposes dead. And so I worked nonstop on that for like 3 days trying to make it work. Apparently, it's a well-known problem that's occurred with novices like me. Maybe about 5% of the butterflies have this problem, and nobody seems to know what the solution is. So I stepped on it, and really bugged me. So that's a major thing. I got a couple other things I'll tell you about here on the next over. One of them's a good idea. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R and 0HBR. Okay, Mike. Well, really interesting. Yeah, the QRP in the QRP news department. I've been watching the mailing lists and the news groups, and the one thing I saw in addition to the Super Drug Radio was there was a discussion of the one of my favorite pieces of test gear, the almost all digital LC meter. Some guy asked about it on one of the lists. I think it was on QRPL, and of course it got rave reviews. Everybody kind of wanted to chime in saying, yeah, I got one, it works great. And it does. I have one sitting up workbench here. Like, it's just great fun to be able to reach out and figure out exactly how many microhenries there are in that coil or something like that. So very, very useful. And, well, yeah, plugging code in there, see? That's way beyond me. And I guess struggling with ordinary kind of discrete component analog circuits is frustrating enough. And getting code and microprocessors involved would be just would probably push me over the edge. So I think I'm going to stay solidly stuck in the, I guess, the 1950s for now. Although I do every once in a while get that that urge to kind of learn more about digital and get with it a bit. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Hey, I got myself a Gmail account. I think I might have told you. And all this Google mania has prompted me to get my my Gmail account. So I haven't used it yet, but I just feel part of the Google revolution now. So by the time I get around to use it, they'll probably cut me off for failing to use it. But it's there. And, wow, watt meters, BBM scales. Wow, you're getting advanced. That's pretty cool. Let's see, what am I hoping to work on here? I'm looking over at the bench. My crystal radio that isn't receiving much is still sitting there, so I guess I got to work on that. Oh, I asked for a new copy of Technical Topics. I don't know if you've ever read Technical Topics, but in the RSGB magazine Radcom, there's Pat Hawker has a column every month, just kind of collection of technical news and ideas, and it's really great. I love it. And they put together every decade, they put together a compilation of it in book form. And I've got all of them, and they just came out with the 1990s. So I told my wife that would be a good Christmas gift, so I'm waiting to see that. And I'm currently reading a British book about Maxwell and Faraday and all those guys, and it's called Einstein's Heroes. Quite good. Actually forces you to do some math, which is a good thing every once in a while. So, what's the good idea? You always got some. KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, one was my idea, and it wasn't much of an idea, and the other one I stumbled across, and I've never seen it before, but basically, I made a really simple variable attenuator that's basically, 200 ohm resistors to make a 50 ohm dummy load, 200 ohm, 2 watts, so you get like a 4 ohm, 4 watt, a 4 watt, or 5 watt dummy load. And then off the dummy load, you go into a 10K pot and maybe two sets of these, and take the wipers and run them to the output. So that way you have, you can use your transmitter as a sig gen. And I had baling wired one together, but I made a nice clean one with a pretty little knob and put it in a half size Altoids and two BNCs. So it's a two port device with a knob on the top. You know, two BNCs, connectors, and a knob. It's really handy. You take your QRP transmitter and you turn the knob down and get the signal level you want and use it as a sig gen. I'm real happy with that one. The other one is kind of a cross between art and electronics. It's the Scrimshaw surface mount technique for generating prototype circuit boards. Over.
Scrimshaw circuit boarding, huh? I guess it's, I'm guessing you're just taking some copper clad and just carving it away. That must be Scrimshaw always gets my attention because I lived in the Azores for 3 years, and a lot of Scrimshaw out there before they got rid of the railing, but still a lot of it around. And so you're bringing Scrimshaw to electronics. I guess you're just carving it neat on the variable attenuator. Yeah, I think I've seen things like that. I wonder if you could get it calibrated, but. Yeah, using the rig as a signal generator. Well, the HW8, you know, it's good for that. I'm surprised I haven't blown the finals on mine by now. I'm thinking about hooking my HW8 to the solar panels in the gel cell and just making the thing completely solar powered. I'm not, as you know, I'm not that into CW anymore, but it might be fun. Might make it a little bit more attractive if the whole thing is made with homegrown power from the Volkswagen solar arrays. So tell me more about the Scrimshaw, Mike. KL7R on 0HPR.
Well, I was reading this this application note from Analog Devices. I was reading up on the chip that America QRP Club is using in their DDS VFO. And I think it's like an 9850 or something like chip. And I was looking at that, and there was an application note of this ham, that in English ham, I can't remember his call now, that was using the chip and how he was programming it and everything. And anyway, in passing, he said, here's a technique I've used that works pretty well for making one-off PC boards. And he says, take your circuit board and spray paint it, and then scratch off everything, scratch islands on the circuit board in the shape of the traces you want, and I did that, and I could scratch between the pins of a surface mount chip, and I did that. I accidentally bought some picks that were surface mount, so I made my first ever circuit boards. I've never made a circuit board in my life, and I started out with this Scrimshaw technique, and I haven't heard it written about in the QRP literature, so I was thinking about maybe writing it up and mentioning it. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Wow, that's neat. Yeah, I hadn't thought of using paint. I've used all kinds of other stuff to mask it. Yeah, I remember when the first circuit boards I did, it must have been about 15 years ago, I was making a little, 20 meter QRP transmitter. I was building the VXO controlled 6 water from QRP Classics, a wonderful ARRL book. And, I went out and got all kinds of things. I got the little decals that you would put on there to mask where you wanted the pads to be and all that. And for a while there, I was trying to use the special magic markers or paint that other people would recommend, nail polish and everything else. And it was tough going there. But it sounds like you found a real nice technique. I think in the end, I ended up, one of the things I used to do was just I used to use electrician's tape, just electrical tape, cut it out sort of the shape that I wanted. You know, I wasn't making any kind of fancy pads or anything like that. I was keeping the traces pretty wide, and I used that quite a bit. It was better because the trace ended up very thick. It was less likely to lift off. When I used the little kind of fancy ones with the decals and everything else, the trace would end up very thin. If I got it hot, it would lift up off the fiberglass board or whatever it was, whatever. So I used thick ones. But the paint thing sounds good. And tell me about what you used for the etchant. And did you make a mess? Did you get it all over everything? It's usually part of the process. Turn it over to you, Mike. KL7R, M0HPR.
You had me primed and worn there. I had the rubber gloves and the plastic and the funnel and everything. And I actually bought a bottle of etchant. I couldn't believe it, but our local Radio Shack has 3 bottles of etchant. They've been there for 5 years, and I bought one bottle, and the other 2 are still there. So I'm thinking I'll grab the others. I may have an actual use for them now. But anyway, I think it's pretty cool. The guy mentioned using a nail as the scribe. I actually have a Scrimshaw set up for, I used to do pen and ink art and some scrimshaw, and I had that basically. And it kind of scratched a little bit too fine, but it was good for the surface mount stuff. Well, shoot, you ought to hack up your HW8 and make it into a double sideband rig, then you'd have the whole lash up there.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about that. Yeah, maybe I will. And I'd have to convert that final from Class C. I think we've talked about that. And, yeah, that would put me on all bands. And then I could just rig up a little amplifier after it. That'd be great. Yeah, that's an idea. See, you launch these projects here, Mike, and, I'll probably struggle with this thing now for the next 6 months and end up destroying my HW8. Ah, yes, etching though. Ah, yeah, that's good. That's then when you get the gloves on and you get you're pouring the chemicals and you get that real mad scientist's feel to the shack. That's good. Yeah, I know what you mean about finding that stuff in Radio Shack. You think to yourself, are there other people out there doing this? It's kind of scary. I found etchant in Radio Shack stores all over the world. We had a Radio Shack in the Dominican Republic, which was a godsend for me. I mean, it was great. There were other places where you can get electronic parts, but the Radio Shack was good. And so I used to find all kinds of stuff there. But, you know, sometimes even in underdeveloped or poorer countries, it's actually easier to get parts for electronics projects. And the reason is people there, they don't have enough money to throw things away and start all over. So there are lots of little businesses out there catering to people who have to repair things when they break. So there was one street in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic that was sort of Electronics Row. And it was really weird because you could walk into these little tiny kind of hole-in-the-wall stores, and you could walk in there and ask for a 10 microfarad electrolytic capacitor, and the girl working behind the counter, who didn't have the slightest idea what you were actually talking about, would run back and a couple seconds later come back with this little plastic bag with one 10 microfarad electrolytic capacitor. You could also, this was what I discovered was really cool. If you blew up the transformer or the RF choke on your transmitter, there were people down there literally working in the street who knew how to rewind it for you and would do it for ridiculously, they'd ask you ridiculously low prices. I'd have to give them more because I knew about the amount of work involved. But I once blew up the, I think it was the RF choke, my helicopter's HD-37. And I yanked that thing out and took it down to the street and asked around a bit, and they said, oh yeah, Julio down there on the corner rewinds chokes. So I took it to this kid down there on the corner who was like hanging out next to the newsstand. He looked at it and he says, oh yeah, I can do this for you. Come back a week later. He stripped it down, pulled everything out, rewound it. So you ever blow up an RF joke. I know a guy in Once at Mayo in Santo Domingo who can fix it for you. KL7R, M0HPR.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the ladies I work with went to Afghanistan before the major dust up over there, and she had some pictures of the guys sitting down on what looked to be dirt floors. And on the wall of their hut, they had files arranged, like rasps, you know, that kind of file, arranged as though they were, you know, $100 chef knives. And these guys were filing and making by hand, 45 automatics. and just astounding that somebody can do that without a lathe, at least. I don't know how they pull that off. It's just an amazing workmanship. I heard stories about Eskimos having a four-cylinder engine, board on a boat, and the engine used too much gas, so the guy took a hacksaw and cut it in half and made it into a two-cylinder engine. That is amazing. I did have a chance to look at that rig. I forget the name of it now. Maybe you'll remind me. I believe a guy in India that made a rig that could be built by people overseas that didn't require a lot of toroids used rubber hose grommet gaskets as non-ferrous toroid cores or forms. And the only toroids they had in there were ferrites based on the ferrites you'd find on the Ballon going into, from a 75 to 300 ohm Ballon for a TV set. That's pretty interesting read. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, that's Farhan's rig. Really, really neat. I think they call it the bi-directional, and it's because it's based on some circuits. I think you can find them in solid state design, like mixer circuits, where you know you could use the input and the output, but you could switch them around. So when going from transmit to receive, you know you don't have to do a whole lot of switching. So a lot of the circuits are bi-directional and cuts down on the number of stages. And I thought the thing was pretty neat. I mean, he's got this little FET-based final amplifier. And all very simple circuitry, easy to reproduce. So I think a lot of people are building them. They've got a good Yahoo site or Yahoo group going. And I'm tempted. I think it's a wonderful project. He's getting a lot of good attention for it. I don't know if you saw the clip with him being interviewed by CNN. Very typical of the really smart guys coming out of that huge country. Interesting stuff going on over there, and real good homebrew tradition in India too. I like to go and look at some of the Indian ham radio magazines. A lot of them are now online, and there's always been a lot of home brewing going on there. A lot of it for necessity. It's kind of sad that when countries get going economically, people start to stop home brewing. And I remember when it was very common to talk to Russian hams and to find that they were using homebrew rigs. But it was a weird thing. After a while, people started apologizing for using homebrew rigs. It was almost as if they were ashamed of it. They all wanted to move on to the Yaesus and Icons and Kenwoods. And it's a shame because you don't hear all that kind of homebrew stuff out of Russia and the East anymore. Yeah, the Chirp ECW. Sometimes I actually like to hear Chirp ECW every once in a while. I knew that it was kind of like that you were going to work a rig with some character. But you also worked a lot of rigs that were really excellent and completely home brewed. It was always amazing. The guy would say very, very casually that it would cover all bands from 160 to 6 meters and home brewed and parts that he scrunched together. That was pretty cool. A lot of that going on in Cuba now. The Cubans still do a lot of home brewing because they can't get parts. And so you see some interesting rigs coming out of Cuba. There's one double sideband rig there that Arnie Coro has been working on. They've done a tube version for 40 meters, and I think they've also done a solid state version, just a simple double sideband rig. I think they call it the Islander. But interesting stuff. What else I was going to mention to you? Yeah, the bidirectional, bilateral. The mixer's made out of diodes. Yeah, great stuff. Hey, let me say hi to one of our listeners who was kind enough to send us an email last time, John McLaughlin. I don't know where you're listening from, John, but appreciate the email. And maybe shoot us an email and tell us where you're listening from. I see you had a... I couldn't tell from the email address So let us know. It's always kind of neat to know who is who's out there listening. And oh, hey, Mike. Speaking of listening, it's still a bit of a secret that I got my my wife an MP3 player for Christmas. I don't think she'll be loading solder smoke onto it, but you never know. But I had to look into the MP3 player market a little bit, and interesting stuff out there. And, so I picked her up one so that she could use it when she goes to the gym. And also, I'll probably get one of those little things where you can pop it in and play the music when you're inside the house and everything else. So, yeah, we're moving into the iPod generation. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right. Yeah, well, you can take a set of Sound Blaster speakers and just plug them right in. Just they'll work fine. The ones that have a subwoofer actually sound really good. that's great. Oh, yeah, I you know, I'm in Alaska, so I talk to Russians often, and I did notice, you know, that after Russia started, some of those guys started making some pretty big money, and you know, they're all running Yaesu FT1000s and the matching Yaesu amp with locked periodic antennas and the latest computer to wire up to it. That's quite a difference from maybe 10 years before, where you know, you'd hear a chirpy CW with hum on it and a guy ripping along at about 35 words a minute or 40, and every time he keyed, every time he was turned over to him, he had to you could hear him adjusting his VFO to put his transmit frequency back on his receive frequency, because he drifted his transmitter drifted so far out. But yeah, they're excellent operators, first class operators. Russians stomp my tail when it comes to CW, and I'm not too bad at CW. They're usually really good. Well, cool. Well, happy holidays. If I don't talk to you before, I'm pretty sure we will, Bill. But I have, now that I've stopped obsessing over these stupid mistakes I made on the DDS VFO and having to make circuit boards to cover for the surface mount chips that I bought instead of the full pin chips, I can get back to making Christmas projects like I was doing about a week and a half ago. I've been doing a needlepoint project for my wife, and hopefully I can finish that before Christmas gets here. Kind of winding down, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, we're getting the Christmas thing going here, too. Mike, we got the tree up, and the kids decorated the tree. Christmas lights are starting to appear in the windows. So, yeah, it is the season. We should do, next time we talk, we should talk about that website that on, I think, Makezine, that had all the Christmas gifts for geeks. There was some really neat stuff there. And, yeah, well, I saw something the other day on Hackaday about a, I think it was a digital clock, but used an old style Nixie tubes, kind of a Cold War '60s throwback kind of thing. It had, I think all the electronics in it were modern, but they used the Nixie tubes there. And I thought of your LED clock project, so you might want to check out Hackaday. I look at that thing all the time. Just a great great site. And then what else? You know, I've been looking at Mars. I told you I finished reading the Mars book. I'm kind of sad that I finished it. But now every day as I walk home from work, Mars is up there bright in the sky and makes me think of the rovers. So we'll talk about the rovers some more next time, too. Yeah, I'll try to talk before the holidays. I'm going to be around. I'm not going anywhere. So it'd be good if we talk again. And I'm going to, like I said, start dealing with the software to see if I can start becoming the editor here of Solder Smoke. And hey, if anybody's out there listening, please shoot us an email. We'd like to get feedback. Mike, I'll let you go. I'm going to go watch some TV and work on Christmas projects. So 73, and I'll talk to you soon. KL7R, M0HBR.